Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, April 16th, 2018, and this is episode 139 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad, and joining me on this Monday is Eric from Georgia. How are the dogs? How are the pecans?
Everything's good. It's chilly here, but I feel bad because the rest of the country snowed in, so, you know, things right? are good.
I'm supposed to fly to Boston on Sunday, and I was getting all freaked out, but I guess the weather's going to calm down by then, so thank God.
It's so weird. So many games have been canceled. Like, six games were canceled yesterday. I don't ever recall seeing anything like this.
No, this is a lot. Major League Baseball, but they did build in a lot of off days this year. They started the season earlier to account for not weather, but it was really more off days for the team. So hopefully they can take advantage of that. In fact, the Giants are going to be playing that doubleheader next weekend, I guess, against the Dodgers when they're coming back home. So that'll be fun. But before we get to that, we got to talk about the Giants. That's what we do here. And unfortunately, it's not a lot of fun to talk about this week, guys and gals. They didn't do so hot. They went 2-5, losing 3 in a row to San Diego. They are now 6-9 in fourth place, only a half game up on LA and 5 games back of Arizona. Of course, LA is winning tonight, so pretty much they're going to be cellar dwellers with the boys in blue, and I don't think the Dodgers are going to be there that long. I don't think anyone thinks the Dodgers are a sub-500 team this year. So the Giants might be occupying this spot for most of the season if they don't get their ass in gear, because, Eric, this week scared me, man. It really did. After dropping 2-3 to Arizona at home, which, okay, but you lost one game 2-1, and another game you had to claw and fight and win on the last at-bat again. It was against San Diego that really, I think, exposed the Giants. They don't have their top three starters, and Cueto's coming back, and they had to bring up a couple of new guys, which we'll talk about. But I think both their offense and their defense, or their pitching, just let them down against San Diego. To lose 3 in a row against the Padres, who are not world beaters, is just, it's a gut punch. There's no excuse in that. I mean, obviously, you got to get at least a split, but I figured they were going to take 3 out of 4. That was kind of the confidence I had going into that series. What about you?
Well, I thought they were better than what they showed. It was just kind of strange that starting pitching failed them, I thought, over the last 3 days. Block went 5 innings, Holland went 4 2/3, and Beattie went 3 2/3. So after Stratton's gem and Law picked up those 2 innings, it was up to the bullpen, and they just couldn't hold it together this weekend. They've been taxed so much that I think the starting pitching and the bullpen just kind of ran into a wall a little bit. And I hate to say this, the Padres looked like the better team. I don't know if it's because they're young, and, you know, the Padres always seem young and hungry, but, like, for some reason they seem like they're willing to attack more than the Giants are. I mean, the Giants got screwed the other night by a replay call, but that didn't, you know, it's not going to change the course of the season. No. The Padres just seem like a team willing to attack, and the Giants, like, they looked flat. They looked like, you know, the same team that we saw last year. I don't understand. I tweeted it out earlier today. In 2016, during the first half of the season, when the Giants had the best record in baseball, they were 9-0 against the Padres. Since then, they're 10-23 and haven't won a single series in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And there's like, if they can't beat the Padres, there's big problems. They're getting beat in the 5th, 6th, 7th inning of games, so the 2nd and 3rd time through the order against the pitchers, and the hitting is just not there. What are they, like 170 with runners in scoring position right now?
158.
Oh, that's bad. Yeah, there it is. 158. Yeah, so it's just, it looks like the same old with kind of different characters. Yeah, Longoria had a good day, and his swing is coming around the other day. Yeah. McCutcheon, you know, looks decent, but I mean, it looks like the same team again. And until they get their pitching back, until Bumgarner comes back, until they figure out that Suarez should be a major league pitcher, you know, I'm not sure they're going to get it on track until the rotation settles down.
Yeah, that's what has been, I think, a pretty clear exposure from this, you know, from this Giants team. Of course, Tyler Beede and Suarez made their major league debuts this week, but of course, Beede had two starts in the week. So we had three of the seven starts were made by guys with no collective starts before the first two, right? And then just one after that. So that's not good when you have three rookies pitching in seven starts. They Suarez definitely looked good. A couple of guys tattooed him, but I think overall he looked dynamic. He had really good stuff. Beede had flashes of it. He did, but what you said makes sense, and that's what I noted. First time through the lineup, no problem. After that, couldn't figure it out, or other guys figured him out, or a combination of the both. So, I mean, to see Beede kind of cruising along after three, getting into the fourth, and then just started to get hit, started to walk, lost command.
I read about it a little bit. His first time through the order, that changeup was filthy. Mm-hmm. And then the second time through the order, he got hit on first pitches a lot because guys were geared up for it and ready.
That's what
this
they were
time
doing.
Around.
They were aggressive, yeah.
Right, this time around. And it was so frustrating. He had three walks. They were all to left-handed hitters, and they were all in counts that were either 0-2 or 1-2. And it wasn't like they were fought off or anything like that. He just suddenly lost the strike zone. Mm-hmm.
And another telling thing, especially in the Padres series, okay, exclude the 10-1 game because they just let that thing get away. And they even had a 1-0 lead in that game, ironically. But the Padres in the series, especially the second and third games, really bunch their hits up. The Giants will get a hit or two an inning, and that's it. The next inning, a hit or two, runners in scoring position, nothing happening. Next inning, a walk and a hit, nothing happening. Next inning, a hit, nothing happening. They spread their hits out like no one's business. Padres, no hit, no hit, no hit. Oh, let's give three hits in a row and a walk or something like that. I mean, I know at one point they were up 5-1 and they had the same amount of hits as the Giants. I mean, that's how the Giants season is going. And it's crazy to think they're dead last with runners in scoring position again, batting average, at 158 out of 30 teams. They're dead last out of all of them. And yet their overall team batting average is eighth in the major leagues at 244. So it's not like overall they're the worst hitting bunch in the league. They actually have a, you know, respectable average against their peers in terms of team average. I don't know what it is. I don't think it's the psychological effect of other teams bearing down specifically on the Giants when they have runners in scoring position. I think it's the Giants' lack of concentration or focus or whatever you call it when they have the opportunity to knock runners in. I don't know if they're pressing too hard or what, but it's the same story as last year in the end of 2016. This is exactly what we focus on, you know, month after month after month, is they get the guys on base, they can't deliver the goods. And I don't know how you get over that hump. I really don't. It's not a one-month slump. It's not a two-month slump. We're going on, you know, 2 years now of this, and it just seems to be kind of a culture-wide affliction. And I'm not really sure how the Giants brass is addressing this. I mean, we see the acquisition of McCutcheon and Longoria to help with that, you know, with those situations, but it's not really working so far. I mean, McCutcheon has delivered two big hits, but Longo struggled, and overall McCutcheon has struggled in terms of his overall performance, but we still got to give, you know, a lot of time to these guys to work it out. But I think as a team, I hate to say it, this is not a small sample size anymore in terms of the last 2 years. I think this is just what this team is. They get guys on base and they freeze. I don't know.
It's weird. A lot of their runs this year are coming by home run because, like you said, nobody's getting that hit. This weekend was a perfect example. Friday, they had 10 hits and they scored one run. Mm-hmm. Saturday, Longo and McCutcheon both hit the best home runs that the Giants have seen all season.
Crushed them.
Yeah, they both. It was beautiful swings. But there was nobody else that helped them do anything, absolutely at all. And then just yesterday, there was no hitting. I am sitting here listening to you, thinking about it's time to take a look at lineup construction. Mm. I mean, if we're getting how often have the Giants had two runners on? And I know he came through with a base hit with the bases loaded on Friday and Thursday night or whatever it was. But Hunter Pence will come up and suddenly there's a hole, or, you know, they'll have two outs, runner on third, and Brandon Crawford will come up in the eight hole. They'll walk him. They'll go after the pitcher, or Belt will stand there looking at a strike three. Like a lot of the guys, Longoria is another one who's really not driving in runs when he comes up with runners on base. Like a lot of these guys seem to be like holes in the lineup, and I don't know how you can space them out any differently to prevent that. I mean, short of shoving Pence down in the number eight spot in the order all day, it's hard to run into those gaps. Lineup construction has something to do with it. And I think another part of it is in 15 games, they face 10 left-handed starters. So Bochy hasn't been able to trot out the lineup he wants of putting Panic at the top, Belt second, McCutchen third, Posey, Longoria, etc. He hasn't been able to do it that way. And I think that's a big part of it, because the Giants are only hitting 231 versus left-handed pitching. And in the NL West, apparently that's all they're going to see.
We'll take 231 with runners in scoring position right now, I'm telling you. Yeah. That beats that 158.
Sure. But I mean, how often does it happen that somebody gets on, somebody gets over, and then it's like Pence comes up, he swings a three out of the zone, and everybody sits down?
Well, it's getting to the point where every time they put a couple ducks on, I literally say to myself, it doesn't matter. Something bad is going to happen here. It's going to be a couple of strikeouts, or like you said, a strikeout, you know, before the pitcher, Brandon Crawford's walked, you know, with two outs and the pitcher strikes out. Or what happened the other day in San Diego when Gregor Blanco bunted the ball while Crawford took off from first. And there was a runner on first and second, by the way, or first and third, I think it was. That's right, because he was going for the bunt. And he pops it behind home plate. Catcher makes a great diving stab and then doubles Crawford off of first. So you just kind of go, yep, I knew something like that was going to happen. I just keep shaking my head at this team. It's like kryptonite is runners on base. I don't know why. I'm really curious about the psychology of it. I mean, again, they're hitting 244 as a team, but only 158 with runners in scoring position. Yet, this is interesting. The MLB league average with runners in scoring position is 245, right? And I think the league average world, league-wide, I got to bring it up, but if I recall, it's basically about the same. What I'm getting at is the average with runners in scoring position is basically within the context of overall average. You know what I mean? So league-wide, there doesn't seem to be a dip in performance when you have runners on. That's not true for the Giants. The Giants absolutely just 90-point drop in batting average when you get guys on base. It's very odd.
It is. And I think probably, you mentioned psychology of it. A lot of times the Giants, they're trying to be a patient team again. And I think that the patience goes far enough to get the guys on. But when the guys are on, they should be a little more aggressive in trying to drive them in. I mean, the Giants as a whole are hitting 345 on the first pitch. That might be the best pitch you see the entire bat. And not enough of them are attacking that first pitch. You know, things like it sucks. There's so many problems right now with this team.
Yeah, that contributes to their run production, of course. They're third worst in the major leagues in terms of runs per game at 3.07. The MLB average is 4.34. So that's almost 50% higher. I know you only say, oh, that's only 1.3 runs. It's almost 50%, guys. That's significant. They're also dead last in the majors with RBI, with runners in scoring position, which makes sense, of course, when you're last in average. They only have 25 RBI as opposed to the major league average of 43. So the average, not the top teams, not the top third, the average is almost 20 runs more, almost doubled what the Giants have produced with runners in scoring position. They are an outlier, man. They are an outlier by just leaps.
We keep saying it's going to regress to the mean, you know, this should even out, this should even out. But when do they look for a correction? And how the hell do you correct that? I mean, is Mac Williamson that correction? He's the only one I can think of that would actually change the lineup at the moment. You know, is dropping Belt down to the seventh or eighth hole part of a correction, you know? Like, we've seen enough to know that whatever they're doing, it's just not working.
Yeah. I was looking at WAR by position and on baseballreference.com. They actually have it ranked out. Now, of course, this includes everybody who's played at each position, so it's not just one particular person. It's overall team WAR at that position. At third base, the Giants had by far their lowest WAR at minus 0.5. Now, Pablo's only had like 8 plate appearances and Longo's had 38. So Longoria is contributing to most of that negative WAR. I think it just highlights that where basically the stats say if you put your average AAA-er there, the Giants would actually have been better off in these first 16 games or whatever, 15 games, which is kind of sad. I'm not going to get too down on Longoria again, because we have to understand that in the beginning of a season, statistics are much more notable. If a guy hits 160 during a 15-game stretch in the middle of the season, or you know, in the dog days of summer, you don't really notice it. The average may dip a little bit, but no one really pays too much attention to it. Buster Posey's gone through those stretches before, believe it or not. He's definitely hit under 200 in a two-week stretch. So I think that's why we have to pump the brakes a little bit with individual performances. But the problem is that you have a lot of suboptimal performances by a lot of players all at the same time. And that's contributing to the entire team's, you know, performance right now. You can always absorb one or two guys in a slump, because there's always a couple of guys in a slump. But when you get half the team in a slump and most of the offense in a slump, you know, except for, say, Brandon Crawford and Buster Posey, and that's about it. You know, it's like, what do you do? And Joe Panic, I should say. Got to give him the kudos. But it's rough. You got two-thirds of the lineup just not performing at all. And you see, you know, teams like the Twins outperforming the Giants.
Twins aren't a bad team. They might make the playoffs again. They were that's a playoff team last year. That's so weird.
That's right. I should temper my accusations there.
Go to the Royals.
Yeah, the Royals are bad this year so far.
Yeah, they are. So are the Reds. Oh, forget about it. You know, it's funny. We focus so much on the hitting, and I was really looking at numbers today, and I noticed the pitching is just – it's having such a problem, and I think it's part of the reason that if the Giants are pressing when they have runners on scoring position, their starting pitching is just not going deep in ball games this year.
Yeah, and that's taxing the bullpen a lot. And,
yep.
You know, that's why they put the extra pitcher in the on the roster. They knew that this was going to be an issue. But they had to go to the fifth starter now, so that took that option away. And now they're getting slammed with guys going three or four innings, and then the bullpen's got to mop up. And then you get in these situations where Guerin and others are just coughing it up, and they're just not holding down the fort and just letting games get out of hand like that last one in San Diego.
Yeah, I mean, starting pitchers have only pitched through six innings 5 times out of 15 games.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's not good, guys. And that's not even a quality start. We're just talking about 6 innings. So
that's what I'm saying. And you know, the relievers, it's for some reason, are the ones giving up the home runs. The Giants are getting killed in like the 5th, 6th, and 7th inning. The second or time through the order against the starter, and then against, you know, a reliever, for some reason they're getting killed in the middle of games. I don't know where it's coming from, but I think, like, the bullpen being taxed. I don't think Guerin was, like, taxed, you know. But, again, law of averages. You know, Strickland looked great, but he's going to give something up. Watson's eventually going to give something up. Probably never, but, I mean, he's supposed to.
Oh, he will. He will.
That's amazing. I love that guy.
Yeah, I know some guys got a little down on Strickland going, I told you he was going to blow. It was like, dude, that's the first run he's given up all year. It's like, whatever. He's not going to hold people to zero runs the entire season. So just, you know, pump the brakes a little bit. It's okay. Yeah, see, let's see where the Giants are. Because I know they're near the bottom in terms of hitting with runners in scoring position, but they're actually pretty much right near the average for batting average. In fact, I think they're 8th, like I mentioned earlier. They are 12th in ERA, so just a little above average, ironically ahead of the Dodgers, who are 15th. That's overall team ERA. But like you said, it's when they get into the bullpen, they're giving up some of these gopher balls, and lately the starters have been struggling, so this number has been going up. So, yeah, pitching-wise, I'd say it needs to be better. Hopefully when they get, you know, Cueto, God, his first two starts were phenomenal. That's exactly what they need. They need that shot in the arm. So hopefully Tuesday night, tomorrow night, he can do something to shut down the D-backs, you know, in the desert. But after that, you know, it's going to be a while because Shark, Should we go ahead and talk about it?
I mean, yeah, because I. I mean, can we just put? Can we just put Suarez in the rotation and let Samaras just stay in the minors? I mean, no offense, Jeff, but.
I mean.
His home run ball is working, man.
I tell you, that's always been his problem, and you know he's had mixed results since he's been with the Giants. But Jesus Christ, this spring he was just lit up like a Christmas tree. Then he gets hurt, and then he's, you know, on his rehab assignment in San Jose, and he gives up 6 runs in the first inning in Class A ball, guys, including a grand slam. I mean, he's giving it up to 21-year-olds now. What is going on? You know, he said, oh, I'm working through stuff and, you know, it doesn't really matter. The results don't matter. It's like, okay, overall, I guess the results don't matter that much. It does to the naked eye. I mean, come on. You're giving up a grand slam to these, you know, kids in Class A. You can't just say, oh, I'm just working through it. You got to, I don't know. It's maybe it's just me, but he ended up going 3+ innings, gave up those 6 runs and just a ton of hits. Just didn't look good. And now they're saying he needs another additional rehab start. And I'm like, you think?
Surprise.
We don't want him giving up 6 runs in the first inning to the Diamondbacks. Thank you. So little worried about him. Little worried about him. Mad bum when he comes back. He's proven that he's overcome injuries before and been the same guy he's always been. But again, that's not going to be until June, it looks like. So we talked about this and we said, look, if the Giants are floating around 500 by the time Mad Bum comes back, maybe they'll have a chance. Maybe they'll have a chance. But they're 6-9, and it's not too late yet, of course. It's way too early to say anything like that. But, man, they're heading into to Arizona and Anaheim on the road, 2 first-place teams. And then they come home, and they play the Nationals, and they play the Dodgers. These next 15 games, Eric.
Jesus, yeah.
I mean, oh, my God. Wow. You look at the schedule and you see all these loaded teams and you just kind of think to yourself, this could go poorly very quickly. And if they find themselves already 5 games back, but let's say they lose 2 out of 3 to Arizona, they lose 2 out of 3 to Anaheim, you know, Washington trounces them, LA, they split, whatever. Overall, they're sub 500. They could find themselves at the end of the month easily 10 games back. And again, mathematically, still could get back in the race, but that's when you start thinking to yourself, where is this team going? You know, are they really going to make up ground? Are they really going to leapfrog all these teams to get to the top, let alone to the National League West? How about just the wild card? Well, you got teams like the Mets and others that are just, you know, outperforming everyone right now. It's really concerning, and unfortunately, you know, they're not loaded with the talent to compete with these teams right now, I don't think, and unless they can get through this is a gauntlet the next 15 games. It's a really, really tough road. It's a bunch of playoff teams are going to be playing. If they pull like a 5-10 or something, or a 4-11, I mean, the season isn't over, but they would have to just play like gangbusters to even get back in it at that point. And yeah, that's what I'm afraid of happening.
Yeah, they'd be like 10-20 at that point.
Yeah.
And that's not good enough. Samaras led into this, and I'm thinking about my dream rotation for the Giants would be Mad Bum won't be back until June. As you said, they moved him to the 60-day DL, so
yeah,
he can't even come off the DL until May 29th or something, May 30th.
Yeah, and then he's going to have his rehab starts and all that stuff, right?
Right. My ideal rotation would be Bumgarner, Cueto, Suarez, Stratton, Block. And I think that would be the best to give them a chance to win. And if the Giants can get out of their own way over the next 15 games, they should be able to hang. If they're willing to play, it's weird, but an outfield, Austin Jackson, Gregor Blanco, and Andrew McCutchen has been their best outfield. Has been their best outfield. They're all 3 center fielders. They're speedy guys. And Blanco is consistently making contact. You know, so if the Giants would be willing to adapt, I think that they can hang in there during this. But if they're going to keep trotting, you know, certain players out to certain positions 4 out of 5 nights a week, it's not going to do them any good. Because if nothing changes, nothing changes.
By the way, I didn't realize this till just now, but the guy who hit the grand slam off of Smarja a few nights ago, he had only hit 2 career minor league home runs in 716 at-bats.
Wow.
So that's how on Samarja's home run ball is right now. Even a guy who hits one every 360 at-bats got one off of a major league pitcher. So there you go. Maybe you and I should have a few at-bats against him. See what happens.
I mean, if he's going to leave the ball up in the zone, I know I can get my hands around a bell-high fastball. I can hit a 90-mile-an-hour pitch. So bell-high fastball, I make the right contact, it's entirely possible.
My God, 2 home runs and 716 at-bats. Well, there you go. All right. So he's going to have one more rehab start. Until then, Cueto is going to be starting Tuesday night, I believe. And, of course, Tyler Beede was sent down. So I think we're going to see him again later this year. And I do like Beede. He's got some good stuff. Like you said, his changeup was moving, and he was keeping guys off balance. But it just second time around, both starts, guys just changed their approach, and Beede got lit up. And that's just what happens in the major leagues. You know?
I don't really like him. I don't understand the fascination with him. I feel like that's another get out of their own way. I feel like the Giants are trying to force Beede. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know it was in California, but he kind of got lit up last year, and he had like a ton of walks, and we're seeing it. The guy like just suddenly loses the strike zone. He just doesn't feel like a guy that can close. You know, and I know he's a starter, but you know what I mean by that. You know, close the 5th, 6th, 7th inning when he needs to get out of it. You know, when the team's up 2-1. Beede, I don't understand the fascination with Beede. Maybe I'm just, like, totally enamored with Suarez, and I feel like they're in competition with each other. Mm-hmm. But Beede didn't do much for me. I don't get why the – if the changeup is the only reason the Giants love him, there's other guys with good changeups.
I hear you. I hear you. I mean, just when he's on, he really is – kind of almost I'm not comparing him to Greg Maddux, but just the ability to pull that change up. But he's inconsistent with it. And so it's one of those guys where you hope he can figure it out, and maybe he's not going to. Maybe he has a couple 3 good innings a game, but then he just tires out, loses mental focus, or guys like we both know, I mean you brought it up, and they were definitely making a point out of this. The Padres were swinging at the first pitch their second time around. And they were getting hits. So you know, they said, all right, we're not going to wait for that changeup. We're going to attack it first.
Yeah. I'm not sold on Beede. I mean, I know nobody's really, like, sold on Beede. But it feels like since he was a first-round draft choice that the Giants are trying to shoehorn him in there. And it's, like, you know, enough. Let's see what he does for 5 to 10 starts in the minors. If he keeps getting lit up, it might be time to move on to somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Giants have not brought up anyone in the last 10 years that have matched the excitement of Tim Lincecum in terms of pitching, right? I mean, I remember the day that he was called up, I went down to the local brewery, bar, restaurant, Irish pub or whatever, and, you know, watched his – well, he had already made a relief appearance, but I went down to the bar to watch his first start just to see this skinny little 5'10" kid throw, at the time, 97, 98 miles an hour. With vicious movement, and I mean, it was just so fun to watch, and he had so much hype coming up. Yeah, that's definitely not Tyler Beede or Andrew Suarez, for that matter. I mean, no one's, you know, had that kind of excitement and pop coming up. But there's other guys though that have been pretty solid so far in their early careers. Chris Stratton, you know, I mean, you look at his numbers and they're not the best, but you know what, he pulled out 7 innings and 1 hit the other night, and that's really funny. The Giants ended up, you know, winning that game, of course, 7-0, and they only gave up that 1 hit. The only hit which Stratton gave up was to a pitcher who wasn't even coming in the game to pitch. He actually pinch hit, got a base hit, and it ended up being the only time in Major League history in which the only hit of from a team was hit by a pitcher pinch hitting. I know, that's totally specific, but... anyway, it's baseball.
Well,
it's
it was the first time since like 1935 that a relief pitcher for a team got the only hit for that team in the game, which is fascinating to me that it's been almost 100 years since that happened. So the pinch hit thing, you know, it's not surprising. I mean, it's just so weird.
Well, because pitchers just don't pinch hit, right? So, I mean,
right.
you can count on your hand, you know, two hands, probably how many times pitchers have pinch hit. You know,
it made more sense than that, too. Well, it made sense. The Padres pitcher, the guy was getting lit up. Like, the Giants should have scored like 10 runs off this guy, and they only got like three off of him.
Oh, you're absolutely right. They scored those seven with the Posey double and the home run and all that. But they left so many runners on base. That game should have been 12-0 easily.
Right.
And they just couldn't knock him in. Yeah. They got a couple, but again, leaving runners on base. Let's see. I already covered some of those wacky stats. Yeah, Giants last in third base WAR. So let's go ahead. Let's talk about who's hot, who's not. We've already covered some of these guys before, but this is just kind of mostly talking about the last seven games since we recorded last. But Brandon Crawford is 8-for-21, hitting .381, but no RBI and 9 strikeouts. So it's really deceiving. You look at that .381, 21 at-bats. But he struck out 9 times out of those 21 at-bats and still got 8 hits. So that's weird. He's like 8-for-12.
Wow. With
what is that? 8-for-12 for basically balls put in play, right?
Yeah.
Because the other 9 were strikeouts. That's really weird. So batting average with balls put in play is pretty high. Jackson is 5-for-15, a modest .333. You see the theme I'm going for here. It's a stretch to put in who's hot. Posey, which is almost always on this list, 7-for-22, .318 with a homer and 5 RBI. Chris Stratton, we just talked about him, 7 innings with a hit. And as far as the bullpen, you can wrap up Maranta, Johnson, Gomez, and Watson. They combined for 10 and a third innings this week, no runs and 5 hits. So some of the bullpen's been doing okay. And to be honest, the times I've seen Maranta and Johnson out there, kind of impressed me, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
These are
really
guys
like
that weren't
Maranta.
Even going to be on the team. And they're here and they're pitching pretty well.
Johnson too. He's been – I think I gave both those guys a tip of the cap on Friday because they've been stepping up with multiple scoreless innings at different times. I wanted to add to the who's hot on Wednesday, was it, I believe? Let me go back to this.
Oh, yeah.
On Wednesday, I read about two San Jose Giants hitters hit for the cycle in the same game. It's never been done before. It's never been done in the major leagues. It's never been done before. You know, it's one of those first time ever. And not only that, they were playing first base and second base when they did it. So the right side of the infield hit for the cycle. That was Wednesday for San Jose. On Saturday, the two guys are Jalen Miller and Gio Brusa. On Saturday night, Jalen Miller hit a walk-off home run. On Sunday afternoon, Gio Brusa hit a walk-off home run. Both home runs came with the Giants down 1 and with 2 outs in the bottom half of the inning. I mean, that's just crazy. What a week for those two guys. You know, you talk about being hot. Those two guys were, like, red hot. Jalen Miller and Gio Brusa. Never heard of them before. We may never hear of them again. But they were on absolute fire this week.
They should get on the next flight to Vegas. That's all I know, right? I mean,
right?
Yeah, these guys are not lighting up the minor league depth charts here, but you know, hey, you never know.
That's amazing. I mean, it's fascinating to me that the same two guys hit walk-off homers in the same week. I mean, baseball, man. Bartolo was perfect through 7 innings last night.
Thanks
baseball.
For mentioning that. Yeah, in
anything
fact,
can happen.
I totally forgot to put it in the notes to talk about Ohtani last week and what he's been doing. Especially that first week of the ball or of the season. But yeah, last night I get the alert that, you know, Cologne has a perfect game through 4 or 5 or whatever. I was like, what? He's the only guy left in the major leagues. And I've said this before, who's older than me. He's older than me by like, I don't know, 150 days or something like that. He's almost 45, but I don't turn 45 till November. So he's a little ahead of me and he's about 75 pounds ahead of me too, but he's just big sexy, man. He's fun to watch because he's just that beer league softball, you know, body. Yeah. And you see some of his original photos when he was with the Expos and everything like that. And it's hilarious to see him. He's this skinny little kid too. He's enjoyed his luxurious lifestyle, but
I love Bartolo.
Oh, I do too. And I know a lot of Giants fans are like, oh, we got to sign this guy. And I was like, not one for that. Obviously.
No,
now,
me
I'm
neither.
Like, well, I might have taken that one start there, but I think over the course of the season, he's going to get lit up. But yeah, well, it was fun because I turned it on and it was just ending the top of the eighth, And I was like, oh, crap, he still has a perfect game. And so they show Colon in the dugout, and he's coming up behind his catcher, and he's, like, patting him on the butt and, like, joking and laughing. And, like, no one's around him. They're all trying to avoid him. But he's like, hey, let's go, let's go, let's go. He's, like, in a good mood. And he goes out there, and, it, you know, first battery, I'm watching live, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to jinx this guy because I haven't seen any of the 21 outs, right? This is the 22nd batter that's up, and I'm watching for the first time, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to jinx this by watching him. I don't really believe that, but I just like to say that. And sure enough, he goes a 3-1 count, and I'm like, dude, don't do it, don't do it. Shroom, just sails. Ball. Perfect game over. I was like, ah, damn it. All right. Well, he still got the no-hitter. All right. Josh Reddick, you're on my fantasy team, but you don't get a hit here. Don't get a hit here. Double. It was just like, what are the chances of logging into a game where a guy's retired the first 21 batters and the first two batters you see get on base? I was just like, oh, well, I just screwed that.
It happens to me all the time, man. I did the same thing Sunday. I was like, all right, I'm not going to watch until the seventh. And then I got kind of caught doing something during the seventh, and it went by in a blink. And then I got out there, and I turned it on ESPN, same time as you. You know, Bartolo was in a good mood. He goes out there, and then, you know, happens to me with MLB TV all the time. I'll be sitting here. I'll see on Twitter that some game, you know, some guy's got a no-hitter. You know, he's into the eighth or something. I'll be like, all right, let's go check it out. Oh, well, that sucks, you know?
Well, that's right over.
I go right back to the Giants game or whatever else I was doing. Bartolo, he's so fun, though. He's the – you know, the wife and I were watching, and she asked me, she's like, do you think that at this point the Astros players want to get a hit, or do you think that they also want Bartolo to get it? And she also asked, like, do the fans want the Astros to get a hit, or do they want to see the no-hitter? And the honest answer is they all wanted the hit. Because they didn't want to be like, well, we got no hit by Bartolo Colon. You know, as fun as it would be kind of embarrassing for that one team.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God. Well, Big Sexy was fun. Otani's another guy, and the Giants are going to face him. I actually didn't look at the rotation. I don't know if he's going to be pitching against the Giants. He's not.
No, he was supposed to pitch yesterday in Kansas City, but that game got snowed out. The Angels are off today, and Boston comes to town before the Giants. So Otani and David Price are facing off tomorrow night, meaning Otani will not be in the rotation, but he will probably be DHing during the weekend series.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. But he's been a lot of fun to watch. I mean, not only his stuff, which has been nasty. Again, he also had a perfect game through seven against Oakland after not getting lit up, but Oakland hit him okay the first time around. And then, you know, three home runs in the first week. He's followed it up with bases clearing triples. He's hitting over 300. I mean, this guy, he might be the real deal. I mean, we'll see what he does over the course of a few months, let alone the first couple of weeks, and maybe it's going to settle down quite a bit, which it should. But, man, the guy throws, he hit 100 on the radar gun. I mean, the guy, he's a stud. I didn't think he was this good, but he's pretty nasty.
He's got the we can move on from them, but he's got the quickest hands I've ever seen of a Japanese player come to play in the United States.
I agree.
Like,
with you.
Ichiro's got some good quick hands, but he doesn't have the power and coordination that Otani seems to have, because his hands fly through that zone like quicker than I can blink.
No, it's true. All right, so who's not? We got to cover that. Pretty easy to cover this. We covered most of it. Hunter Pence, 3-for-21 in the last week. That's 143 and 12 strikeouts. Ugh. And we talked about this last week. He is a guy who traditionally drives the ball the other way. He's been good at covering the outside part of the plate. He just seems to be stepping in the bucket, lowering his shoulders, and doing this weird samurai foot sweep kind of thing. You know what I mean? He's always had an awkward swing, but he looks lost. He looks lost at the plate right now. And I don't know, the guy's in remarkable shape. So, you know, I'm not going to blame it on his body breaking down or anything like that. I mean, look at him versus Bartolo Colon, right? I mean, it's like he's a Greek god compared to most people in the league. So I don't know what it is, if it's a mental acuity or timing or his eyesight's gotten poor, his reflexes or what. He's 35. He just turned 35 this week, I believe. His birthday was this week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's getting up there in age. And unfortunately, if you look at his last couple of seasons, he's definitely on a downward trend. And he's getting paid $18 million this year to play left field. And it sucks because you go, man, if the contract was 1 year shorter, maybe they would have. I love Hunter Pence. My God, the guy is an amazing person and human being, and he's fun and he's interesting and he's done great things for this franchise. But just lately, it's just not working for the team. And, you know, he's the guy, I think, at this point, you do have to drop down in the order. I think Longoria, because he's younger and he's more consistent than Hunter Pence has been, I think he'll eventually come around. You know, Brandon Belt, I don't know. Maybe just bat Belt and Pence 7 and 8 right
but
now.
But then you're punting an inning every time through the order lately. Sorry.
It's rough, isn't it?
It is. Like, I'm with you. I love Pence, but I have to think if he wasn't getting paid $18 million, he wouldn't still be in left field.
Oh, no. If he was a 24-year-old, you know, journeyman or something like that, or shouldn't say journeyman, but young kid, no, he wouldn't be starting in left field. No way.
He would. He's been fine in the field, generally speaking, but he doesn't have an arm anymore. His baseball skills just have diminished. Yeah. It's just simple age. His timing isn't what it was. He just, as strong as he is, he still can't get the same heft on a throw. And he never makes solid contact. Everything's off the end of the bat because he's slapping at everything.
He is.
And if the Giants want a slap hitter outfielder, they could put Blanco out there and get better results.
Yeah, he's got that weird curve. He's always had that curved back, but it's like when he's swinging now, when he steps in the bucket, it's like his back is curving even more so he can cover the outside part of the plate. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he's just like flipping conscious. Balls yeah. everywhere. Yeah, he's rolling things over to the left side weakly. So it's just... It's a hole that a lot of people have been talking about, including the broadcasters and other people. They're like, there's an obvious hole in his swing. And there was a fix he attempted in spring training and went like 2 for 24. And he went back to his old swing and hit a little bit better. And apparently he's sticking with his old swing. But to me, that's not his old swing. He didn't used to step in the bucket and cover the plate by arching his back. That wasn't him. So there's something else going on. And I'm not an expert. Obviously, the experts haven't been able to fix it. So, you know, it's one of those things I think he has to work through with help that he has with the team. But I think, like you said, it's just a natural degeneration of talent. And it's sad to see, but, you know, Hunter Pence is probably not going to be on the Giants in 2019. I hate to say that.
No,
but
I feel like he's hamstringing them a little bit this year. And it's not just because Mac is off to a torrid start. But, I mean, if you look at this outfield and they do decide to bring Mac or even Duggar up, you know, who's the guy that gets bumped out? Gorky's is, you know, the first place you go, or Blanco's the first place you go. But I'd rather have those guys coming off the bench than Hunter.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see him coming up in the eighth inning with runners on first and third and being like, oh, yeah, he's going to come through here. You know, he's going to work a count because he's just as apt to swing at three pitches and go sit down. So he kind of like puts them in this awkward position because it's a crowded outfield now, which is really strange.
No, Blanco's been very serviceable so far. So
yeah,
he's actually looked pretty good. Okay, so Andrew McCutchen, I mean, overall, he saved two games single-handedly of their six wins. So he alone has accounted for a third of the Giants' wins. So we're going to take him right now. But as far as the last week is concerned, he was only 4 for 24. 167 with 8 Ks. So again, another guy who I think he's still going to hit his 260, 270 this year with hopefully 20 bombs. I'm not too worried about him, but just a bad week for him along with a lot of the other parts of the team. Brandon Belt, the aforementioned strikeout machine, 3 for 16 with 7 Ks this year. But overall, he struck out 16 times and 40 at bats this year. I mean, so his strikeout average is almost 500. It's getting up there. It's like at 400
40%.
Right now.
Yeah,
it's 400. That's bad, guys. That's not good. And we'll talk about him in a bit. Sam Dyson, 4 innings pitched, 4 earned runs. Tyler Beede, of course, 7 2/3 with 7 earned runs. And Josh Osich, who the first 5 games looked unstoppable along with his facial hair. 3 1/3 innings, 3 earned runs. He just hasn't been the same guy lately. So, I don't know. Did you have any other guys that you thought stood out either – you know, hot or not?
No, it's funny because I said it 2 weeks ago and I'm going to say it again with Kutch. He's still hitting the ball hard.
Yeah.
I don't worry about him. It's like you said, guys go through weeks. No, so I'm less worried about him.
It's different.
His
average isn't tremendously higher than Longo's, but he's shown a lot better contact with the ball than Longoria.
Right.
Longoria's looked lost at times. So Kutch is, he's had some laser beams caught. I remember, it was one game in San Diego there. It was first and second, and he shot a laser at a shortstop, and Panic had to dive back into second base, and he almost got doubled off. That thing gets over the shortstop head. It's going all the way to the wall, and it could be a two-run double. So he's been hitting the ball pretty hard, mostly as of late, just not too much to show for it. But he's had some big hits, as we know.
Yeah. And, I mean, you mentioned guys earlier, Maranta, Johnson, Gomez, Watson. Well, Maranta, Johnson, and Gomez should get a little more work than Dyson and maybe Osich. I think Osich might be the odd man out when Will Smith is healthy, which we're going to talk about in a moment. And I think Dyson is somebody that they might need to get rid of when they pare down the pitching staff a little bit. He's looked good at times, but not really. Like, he just seems like, not that he loses concentration, but he'll throw some cookies up there and invariably get hit.
It's been slightly artificial with a lot of his saves that he brought at the end of the year last year. He's a reclamation project, and I think he's been worth it, at least as far as the end of last year. He did help him win a few games here and there. But, this year he hasn't looked very good. I think you're right. I think he might be the odd man out as opposed to Maranta or these other guys who are younger and up and coming. As far as injuries are concerned, like you just said, Will Smith looks like he might be up in early May, which will be a huge bolster to the bullpen, and I think he would take, logically, Osich's place as the second lefty in the pen with Watson. Mad Bum probably, he's not coming back till June because of the 60-day DL. Shark, he's going to have another rehab start. We're going to see how that goes, but he got blowed the F up in San Jose. We'll see what happens in his next rehab start because, again, if he gets blown up his next start as a rehab assignment and the Giants go, okay, he's ready to go, it's kind of like, you pick up that package at Walmart and you're like, really? I don't know if I want this. Can you just keep it and I can get my money back? Because the box is all dented, guys. I don't, this isn't working for me. So, I don't know. It's just, he's a mystery wrapped in enigma.
I don't know what to do with Samardzija. He's in year three, so of five. Yeah, so it's
of five.
To figure out what to do with him.
Oh, put him in a corner or something. Mark Melancon, and we didn't even go deep into him last week, but here's a guy again. He looked decent all spring, and then he, season is about to start, and he's like, hey, guys, I got a little arm pain here. And they're like, what? Oh, DL. How long? Oh, we're not sure. Well, what's the problem? Well, his pronator in his forearm. Okay, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, we're not really sure yet. We're kind of checking it out. And it's been this very ambiguous kind of, there's been no real answers. This week he did have a stem cell injection, which there were some in the community which suggested that is really not a good sign because they're grasping at straws at this point. There's not a definitive issue that they can address. It's this lingering pain and problem that they don't really have a solution to aside from rest. So they're trying whatever they can to enhance the recovery. But even after the injection, they've basically said, we're going to wait and see in 2 weeks and we'll address it then. And my fear is this sounds like last year when he went on the DL and other players where they go down and they have these mysterious injuries in which we'll readdress it. He'll be reevaluated. Well, we're not really sure. And it stretches and it stretches and it stretches. And I don't know, Eric. I mean, Hunter Strickland, I think I'm confident in him right now until he starts giving up more gopher balls. I mean, come on. That was to Goldschmidt with two outs in the ninth. It happened.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, they won the game anyway. So it is, it's not like he walked two guys and allowed a single. That would have pissed me off more, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But giving up a bomb with two outs to Goldschmidt, you just tip the cap and you go, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
I thought Goldschmidt was going to kill a bird on that one. My gosh.
No, he tattooed that ball. I'm sure Strickland was like, yep, okay, country hardball, whatever.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do. Yeah, nothing you can do.
It's Goldie. But I don't know, man. This is starting to smell like a guy who is going to come back. He's going to have this brief period where he's off the DL, makes like three appearances, goes back on the DL for the rest of the season. And that's my prediction. I think he's going to make three or four appearances this year. That's it. It smells like that to me.
I agree with that, and I said my piece on Melanson a little bit before, and all I really have is that I maintain what I said. He straight up stole money from the Giants.
He did say that.
Like, if we have him for any of our intros or a drop or something, we probably shouldn't use it.
No, I don't have him.
All right,
I only talked to the guy once, and I didn't get a bumper.
That's good. That's good.
I know I have Longo right now at the top of our show, and I'm like, this isn't sounding good anymore. Maybe I should go back to Crawford.
Crawford's got his such chill demeanor when he delivers the line.
That's right. Crawford is everything. I know. It's like,
what? Was that Crawford? I think so. But poor Melanson, man. I mean, I'm so pissed. Like, I feel like he hoodwinked the Giants, and I can't stand the guy anymore. I really can't. I know, but you can't hide an injury like that. And I get it. I always side with players because, I want them to make their money, and I do. But this guy straight up stole money from the Giants. And it's not my money, so it's not frustrating in that respect. It's frustrating in the respect that because of his money being on the books, the Giants might not be able to do other things.
That's the problem, right? Yeah.
Right. Like, I never give a shit how big of a salary a guy has. I don't. I'm all for the players. I'll never side with management. Literally never. But I love you, Giants. Keep giving us the passes. But, when it comes down to it, you want the team to have the ability to make moves, and paying some guy $12 million a year to not know what's wrong is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is, the guy, was one of the most dominant closers over a 4-year stretch. And my only hesitation, and we talked about this 2-3 years ago before they signed him, when they were interested in him, was the fact that he didn't have overpowering stuff. And so my question was always, is he doing this with smoke and mirrors? If he's Greg Maddux, go for it. That's awesome. But has he just been exceptionally lucky? Is he just fooling guys at the right time? Is it going to regress to the mean? That's what I was worried about, because he didn't have a high strikeout rate and he doesn't have high velocity. I had no idea that all of this was going to happen. My God, I'm not saying I'd rather have him tattooed. No, I kind of would. I'd rather have him have suboptimal performances over this period of time, rather than him just being on the DL for most of his stint with the Giants, because, like you said, it just feels like he's stealing money. I know he's not. Okay, we're joking, but it's just like he comes to the Giants and suddenly he's afflicted with all these mysterious forearm issues that they can't even accurately describe.
Which makes it dead money, and the dead money is really more, the issue. I never, Melanson, like, it was smoke and mirrors. Sometimes numbers lie.
Yeah, they do.
It's as simple as that. And sometimes teams, they make a decision, they go with a guy. Yeah, they see things with their eyes, but they get a little, in awe with the numbers, and I think that's what happened with Melanson's. So, yeah. I'm with you. I think three, four appearances back on the DL, and then who the hell knows after that.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to get to armchair manager in a second. I just threw in this interesting milestones that Barry Bonds missed out on. This has nothing to do with the rest of the podcast. I just kind of thought it was interesting. Barry Bonds, of course, his last year, he hit 26 home runs or 28 home runs. He still was a very serviceable major league player, hit .275. The Giants wouldn't touch him, and no other team would touch him because of the steroid issues. We all know that. I thought it was interesting to see that he fell only 65 hits shy of 3,000. He was only 14 games shy of 3,000. And he was only 4 RBI shy of 2,000. I don't know. It was just one of those things where, like, the 3,000 hit one is big, because that's kind of the epic milestone in terms of hitting. 2,000 RBI is kind of a minor footnote. And 3,000 games, again, kind of a minor footnote. But, he definitely, if he played another year, would have had 3,000 hits, aside from getting injured. Would have had 3,000 games and 2,000 RBI. So, wouldn't have helped his chances in the Hall of Fame, apparently. He could have had 10,000 RBI and it wouldn't mattered. because, you know, he did steroids. Because
he's Barry, yeah.
This day and age, you know, these writers have been personally offended by it. And I'm not defending Barry and what he chose to do. I'm still coming from the opinion of, we know there are other cheaters in the Hall of Fame. We know that line has been crossed before. So why are you being holier than thou and still not voting this guy in? Because he also was only suspected after he put up Hall of Fame numbers too. You know, I know a lot of people, and there's a lot of writers out there, they're like, I don't care if there's any evidence that you cheated. I don't care if you hit a billion home runs. You're just not going to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I respect that opinion. I don't agree with it because, again, I think there's too many guys in the Hall of Fame that, you know, are suspected of foul behavior or proven of foul behavior in terms of alcoholism, taking, you know, speed and cocaine, domestic abuse, illegal gambling. I mean, you go on and on and on, right? There's a lot of seedy behavior by a lot of people. And so it's kind of like, oh, now you're taking a stand. All right, whatever. Guess it makes sense, but it's just an interesting note. I never really noted those numbers before.
Baseball reference rabbit holes are the best.
I know, aren't they? That's what I did. It was exactly baseball reference. It's Oh, look at that picture. Look at that link. Look at that story. Yeah, I know.
Yep. Like, wow, that's really? Awesome. I didn't realize. Yeah, I freaking love it. I go down those rabbit holes all the time. That's how I figured out that the Giants hit 9 home runs on their last homestand, and they only had one homestand last year where they hit 10 or more, and it was 10. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't expect to find that, but it came out of nowhere. I love those rabbit hole searches.
Yeah. He also retired with a career WAR, wins above replacement, of 162.8. So he basically won a whole season during his career by himself. That's the way to think about that. Number one is Babe Ruth, of course, at 182. So only 20 games above Barry. And then you had Cy Young at 168 and Walter Johnson at 165. And the highest active player on the career WAR list is Albert Pujols in 32nd place with a 99.7, to put that into context. So, and yeah, the guys below him are Willie Mays right below him at 156. Then you got Ty Cobb, Hank Aaron, Roger Clemens, Tris Speaker, and Honus Wagner. So, pretty incredible company there. But anyway, we'll see what he does over the next, what does he have, 3 years left of eligibility, I think? Something like
four.
That? Four. Four, okay. So, Brandon Belt, armchair manager. We talked about him. I've been a Belt defender every single year. There's all these Belt haters. Just get rid of them. Starting to grow on me. I got to be honest with you. I love the guy. I think he's hilarious. I think his stats are actually much better than people think they are. But this year, it's not working out. 16 times he struck out in 40 at-bats, like you said, 40% of the time. And a lot of the time, it's on called third strikes, especially full counts. And he just, it's like, oh, slumps the shoulders, kind of looks back at the umpire like, dude, man, that was like 2 inches too high. And it's like, okay, it was close. It was on the corner. It was close. Like, you cannot be stuck, especially with runners in scoring position, which has happened quite often with him, just holding the bat. And it's frustrating because the guy's talent, and he just seems to be locking up more. And everyone's noted, oh, Brandon Belt is one of the best eyes in baseball. Even if that's true, that's great. Maybe those are some of the times balls by an inch or two. But the point is that you're dealing with human umpires, and he's running into a part of his career now where either he's swinging in this outlier case of a lot of balls being called strikes, or he's just getting tighter with two strikes. And I think he's getting tighter with two strikes. That's my opinion. And I think he needs to let it out a little bit because he can cover the plate. And he shouldn't be afraid to go down swinging. If he goes down swinging, it happens, whatever. But to get called on third strikes all the time, that's where it's really starting to hurt them.
Yeah, it's frustrating, the stubbornness of not being willing to adjust. And I understand that players like Belt that have good eyes and think they know the strike zone perfectly don't want to expand that zone, even if it means an out, because they think down the line it doesn't. But we don't see those results. And what we see is a guy standing there taking a pitch, you know, 3 inches off the corner of the plate that 9 out of 10 of the guys would have just fouled off and waited for their good pitch. Right. Like, why does he not have the ability to foul pitches off and search for his pitch? Why is he only willing to swing? You know, what is he waiting for? And I know you've defended Belt before. I've talked about it. I was on base percentage and all this. It's worth it and all of that. But I'm not sure. I feel like he represents the whole stubbornness of the Giants in a sense, in that he's not willing to adjust at all. And it's frustrating. It's coming to a boiling point if it stays like this then the rest of the month.
All right. Well, my family's about home, so I actually have to wrap this up right now. I hate to say that.
Okay.
But the Giants have got 3 in Arizona coming up and 3 in Anaheim. So, yeah, they got a tough road ahead of us. But thanks for listening to episode 139 of the TortureCast. We're going to be back probably next Thursday, so in about 10 days or so, because I'm going to be traveling. So we're going to have a lot to catch up on, especially a lot of those 15 games. But you can follow us collectively at TortureCast. Follow us on Facebook or like us there at TortureCast. Also follow us individually at ChadKey21. Of course, Eric at 2OutHits, that's with the number 2. And for Willie and Ben, it's at Fried Duck and at Willie Dills. So, for Eric, this is Chad King signing off for episode 139. We'll see you next time for episode 140. A-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.